Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep. Stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, the Black and Korean conflict. There appears to be a history of conflict between the black community and the Korean merchants in the community. Some say it is because of cultural and language differences. Others say it is simply because of the disrespect and stereotyping of the black community. For the most part, the black community comes in contact with individuals from the Korean community through commerce, business, particularly the hair and beauty industry. What is the nature of the friction between the two peoples? A question was presented to me. Why do black people support something that does not support them, disrespects them, and disenfranchises them? From Sison, the global hair, wigs, and extension market is estimated to reach revenues of more than $10 billion by 2023. I'm about to open up a weave shop. Or can I? Here's some history on the black beauty products industry. From encyclopedia.com, Anne T. Malone. She developed the first successful formulas and marketing strategies aimed at straightening African-American hair without damaging it. She exhibited both a sharp mind for marketing as well as an overly generous cash disbursement policy. All right? She wasn't stingy. As her business grew increasingly prosperous, Malone neglected to keep a tight rein on in-house finances while at the same time bestowing large sums of money to worthy charitable organizations. Such policies eventually spelled the end of her large enterprise. Then we got Sarah Breedlove, known as Madam C.J. Walker. Now, that's probably the one everybody knows. But she's a former employee of Anne T. Malone. She came from the cotton fields of the South, and within 5 years, through her hard work, right, this daughter of former slaves owned and ran the largest black-owned company in the United States. We talking about beauty products right here, y'all. Black owned for blacks, for us, by us, right? From the Library of Congress, Anthony Overton. Overton created the Overton Hygienic Manufacturing Company in Kansas City, Missouri. The company sold baking powder, cosmetics, perfumes, hair products, and toiletries. In 1911, Overton moved his company to Chicago. The company's success allowed Overton to employ over 400 people. And in 1912, they exported over 52 cosmetic products to countries including Egypt, Liberia, and Japan. And I'm going to butcher this name right here. Majori Joyner opened her first saloon in Chicago's South State Street. Joyner's experience in beauty and hair led to her creation of a permanent hair weave machine. That's in 1928, y'all. Rose Meta Morgan opened her first salon, the Rose Meta House of Beauty, in 1945 in New York. The salon offered hair and skin care as well as other services catering to black women. John H. Johnson, y'all know him. He owned Supreme Beauty Products and Fashion Fit Cosmetics, the largest black-owned cosmetic company in the world at the time. In 1942, John H. Johnson founded Johnson Publishing Company, which published the Negro Digest, Ebony Magazine, y'all know that, and Jet Magazines, right? Rihanna, to bring you up to date. Now, I didn't name everybody. Don't shoot me for that, all right? Actress, singer, and entrepreneur, she launched the Fenty Beauty. The company brought in $570 million in profit in only 15 months after its opening. Known for its inclusive branding, Rihanna created Fenty Beauty with the goal of creating products that perform across all skin types and tones. All right? All right, so we're going to continue with the history from the Black-Owned Beauty Supplies Association, BOBSA, Part 1. African-American women spend billions a year on black hair products. They say they make up 10% of the population and purchase 70% of all wigs, extensions, and hair in the United States. Kazur Beauty Supply, they say the Koreans told them that the curling iron product that they made, right, which is a very good standard of curling iron product from what I learned, is wasn't in demand while they copied the product for sale in supply stores. So what they did was they said, hey, we don't need yours. Basically, we copied it. They left that part out, and we got the knockoff. We're going to sell that. So they, I think they still sell the Kazur things, curling irons. Blacks had a total monopoly on the black beauty supply industry back then. The black industry, when the Koreans entered the industry, they took Koreans as a friend and never thought that they would take over the beauty supply business. But in 1965, the Korean wig merchants joined together and convinced the Korean government to outlaw the export of raw hair, said Aaron Rainin, a filmmaker who has documented the marginalization of African-American entrepreneurs in the hair care industry. In the film Black Hair, this ban made it so that one can only buy pre-made wigs and extensions. In other words, Korean hair could only be manufactured in Korea. 6 months later, right, the United States government created a ban on any wig that contains hair from China. Now, that's deep. That's the conspiracy right there. Effectively putting South Korea in prime position to exploit the market. So, all right, then you got the United States government, your so-called taxes and representation going against you right there, Americans. First, I want to caution folks about purchasing merchandise from stores that do not have a return policy, regardless of the state law that might support this absurd policy. Change the legislation that says once you purchase something, you are stuck with it. Rather, you are satisfied with the product's performance, or it works or not. Until recently, I might have thought that some elements that are negative in the black community had a tendency to be harsh on Asian merchants, until my recent encounter with a particularly disrespectful Asian merchant in a beauty supply store. I wondered, is this a Korean thing or is this Korean's thing? Korean beauty supply stores cater to the black community. It said that it is cheaper to set up businesses in the black community for them. So that's what that say. That's the rationale for why they show up in the black community, mostly the impoverished communities, right? Based on what was systematically occurred in the last 50 years or so, I wonder why blacks even buy from the Korean beauty supply store. At least the Korean beauty supply, considering that they are making it difficult for black entrepreneurs to get distribution deals. Sounds like they are at war with black entrepreneurs, and blacks are in love with their products as consumers. That is a very one-sided relationship. I don't know how many of y'all like one-sided relationships, but I personally don't. It seems like the white man isn't the only one who has a history and habit of targeting, oppressing, and disrespecting black folks. The information indicates blacks and Koreans have a serious history of beef. A question was presented to me, as I said, why do black people support something or someone that does not support them, disrespects them, and disenfranchises them? Is it a matter of self-esteem by any means necessary? Are their products really that good? Or is the self-esteem of many black folks codependent upon Korean beauty supply, the Korean beauty supply industry? Is it simply not many other places to shop for black beauty products? Maybe all of the above. Maybe I missed something. Sure I did. From the Washington Post, embattled Korean grocery stores wait out racially charged boycott. This is back in 1990, because we're talking about history here, right? There's a grocery store in Flatbush, the crowd of demonstrators taunted the customers and chained it through bullhorns. Fortune cookies say no money today, and bloodsuckers, right? At least a dozen black youths shouting anti-Korean slurs and armed with bottles and baseball bats attacked three Vietnamese men, believing them to be Korean, police said. This is how bad it got. Confrontation between blacks and Koreans have flared since the early 1980s in other Brooklyn neighborhoods, in Harlem and Queens, and in Atlanta, Chicago, Washington, D.C. The spark usually becomes flame after a fleeting, often innocuous incident. I don't know about all that, but that's what they said, right? A misinterpreted look, a failure to say thank you, a disputed price. Hey, this says $5.99, you charged me $7.99. As in this case, an accusation of shoplifting that results in a skirmish. All right? But at the root of the conflict, they say, exacerbated by language and cultural differences, is resentment at Korean immigrants' success in running small businesses in economically depressed black neighborhoods. So they say that the root of it, right, of the conflict, right, which is made worse by language and cultural differences, is the resentment, black community resenting Korean immigrants' success in the black neighborhood. Many of their stores are known to offer better produce and prices than the larger chain groceries. Now, this is a provocative sort here. That sounds like jealousy. You got what I want, now I'm mad with you, BS. It's more like you came into my community and disrespect me while taking my money issue. Is being polite a part of Korean culture? Because if it is not, this scenario is likely to repeat itself. The sad part about it is it doesn't have to. I say, it is the disrespect Korean merchants bring to the already disrespected black community that is at the root of the problem. That is like putting gas on a fire. Thoughts, emotions, words, and actions can facilitate peace or war, boycotts of businesses or thriving livelihoods, life or death. It could target Korean stores for theft and violence. Being respectful has little to nothing to do with culture and everything to do with being a human being. How you are being affects how you will be. It is an everyday experience in the hood and the world. People know when people are being condescending. I read an article about a black person who traveled to Korea, and they said the Korean people were extremely nice to them. They would offer them assistance, even the older Koreans who did not speak English. You can't get more of a cultural difference than that. And still, the respect is there, or was there, in Korea with this individual. So I said, let me look, because where is all this disrespect coming from? So Wikipedia said in 2010 and 2014 World Value Survey, 42.2% of South Koreans reported they would not want a foreigner as a neighbor. Racist attitudes are more commonly expressed towards immigrants from other Asian countries and Africa, and less toward European and white North American immigrants who occasionally receive what has been described as overly kind treatment. We call that butt kissing, right? From the Huffington Post. To get a better insight into what South Korea people think of black people, the team at Asian Balls took to the streets to find out what kind of stereotypes or perceptions do all you think Korean society has about black people. Some of the answers were, I think most Koreans assume that they are from Africa, which could be used to make fun of them. They occasionally witness racism toward black people. Blacks definitely get made fun of because people think they don't understand Korean. They say things like Negro or Blackie. Others talked about the stereotype perpetuated by Western movies and TV shows that black people are dangerous. Black people are dangerous because you see them in the movies shooting people and doing things, said another woman on common black stereotypes. Didn't Arnold Schwarzenegger kill like 100 people in one movie, maybe more than that by itself? Anyway, in fact, many of the South Koreans that were interviewed say they base their perceptions of black people by what they see on screen. That's not too bright. Even the American movies, Koreans grew up watching, black people are portrayed as poor, while white people are always seen as rich and elitist. Thus, the butt kissing. The movies definitely help form certain perceptions, said one South Korean. So they learn about folks from, they don't want to pick up a book and read. That's a shame. So, I don't know. It's like, what's funny about being from Africa? I don't get the joke about that, but I wouldn't. And if they think black people are dangerous, why the verbal disrespect? Only a fool disrespects a dangerous person. From Black Enterprise, are Koreans keeping blacks out of the hair weave industry? Oh, we have a caller already.
Hey, Carlton.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello, Kenny. Welcome to Provocative Thought, my brother.
Thank you. But I just want to say, yes, it's definitely accurate that Koreans do disrespect our customers. But see, the thing, you can't really blame Koreans. You can't really blame any culture that come in our community and we patronize them. You know, we continue to patronize other cultures than to patronize ourselves. You don't have to go into that nail salon. There are other sisters that are doing nail salons or selling weeds or what have you. You don't, but, you know, we make the decision to patronize the Korean businesses instead of our own. And the Koreans are not the only one. You got to remember that. The Jews do it very well, and they're still doing it. Coming in our neighborhood, setting up shops, setting up businesses, and boom, we go right there. We spend our money. Don't you know we spend 95% of our money for other cultures that don't even like us?
Problem.
This is a serious problem. And it's fact, too. You can look it up. And so who do we put the responsibility on? You cannot stop people from opening up, even though we're stopped from opening up businesses, but you can't stop people from opening up businesses. We have to make the appropriate choices for who we spend our hard-earned money with.
That's correct.
You know, we have, and it goes deeper than that. We got to start training our children, grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and ourselves, and we have to make a very, very serious minded, serious economic mind to say, look, we have spent our dollar with us. Don't you know that in the white community, the dollar circulated 12 times before it leaves? In the black community, it don't even circulate now one time. It just leaves.
Okay.
So we have to start looking at ourselves and blaming others for the decisions that we make. Now, do they disrespect us when we go into their shops and restaurants? Yes. But what do? We keep going back. Look at the Arabs. Look at the Indians for India. The Pakistanis. And this is not just a Philadelphia problem. This happened all over the country. New York City, we always had issue with the Chinese. The Chinese restaurants. Look at what they do. And I want to tell you something about the Chinese restaurant. The Chinese restaurant in a black dominant neighborhood is different from the Chinese restaurant in a white dominant, predominant neighborhood. I know I lived in both and went to it. I could bear witness. And this is recently, too. This is like 2010. Of course, I stopped eating Chinese food. But, you know, look at them. I'm telling you. And that's disrespect right there. And we have all type of cultures that have all type of businesses in our neighborhoods. And we still patronize them when they disrespect us. And the money we spend with them, guess what they do with the money they spend with them? Do they buy a jersey for the neighborhood team? No. Do they buy, do they support other black events like festivals or anything like that? No.
That's interesting.
They take the money that we spend with them and take it back to their neighborhoods. And that's fact.
Right. Okay. Well, I read an article where it said that in terms of, like you said, they support anything in the community. As a whole, that doesn't happen. There was one article where they talked about they feel that the fact that they open up a store in the community, they doing the community a favor. What do you think about that?
What kind of favor? You know, they could think like that. They think they're doing a favor. No. We have entrepreneurs in our community. But as soon as they open up a shop next to it, black folks still go to that other person.
There's a reason for that. You know the reason why they go?
Yeah.
Why they?
Yeah, there's a reason for that. Self-hatred.
Well, there's another reason for that. Let's go through it. Let's go down the line of reasons. That might be one because they don't, maybe they don't prefer to go to a black owned. But here's the thing about this whole beauty shop business. There's 9,800 beauty supply business nationwide. 300 are black owned. So that right there is a problem, right? The Korean Americans, they control all major components of the beauty business. That means there were four central distributors. They're all Korean owned. You said they only work with each other, right? They only work with other Koreans. You hear me?
Yeah.
They make it harder for black people to get in the business. They sell it to blacks at higher prices. They deliver the products late. You know, this is a statement. I'm just reading what somebody said, you know, at higher prices. And they don't allow orders from all black folks, right? So they're controlling that industry. So what happens is if they're selling it to me as a black business more, I got to charge you more. So I set up, they set up next to my store, I'm going out of business. You know why? Because they're selling that thing at a cheaper price. The same thing I have, they're selling it cheaper because they paid less for it. I paid more for it, so to get to recoup my money, right? I have to charge more. So that's how they put black people out of business.
And so again, you can't blame them for that, for a business decision. You really got to blame us. If I got to drive a mile after way or 2 miles,
you can't blame them for being racist. You can't blame them for being racist and discriminating and disadvantaging black folks.
They not the only ones that had that attitude towards.
Yeah, but we talking about tonight, though. We talking about the Korean beauty supply industry who are systemically making it hard on black folks.
Why we can't get the distribution and why we can't open up more of a... See, again, I don't care if you talk about hair supply or food or retail or merchandising or anything or grocery store. We have to start again. You said out of 9,000, there's only 300. Well, we have to get to start from the beginning again. We got to open up more shops. We got to have their licenses. We got to train. We got to teach our young folks about businesses and finances and distribution. We don't have to. Yeah, you know, capitalism got to compete and everything. But again, whatever we lacking, we have to learn how to do it ourselves, whether it's hair supply, whether it's a nail salon, whether it's a market, whatever. And that's in all areas.
Okay.
I'm telling you, Carlton, Koreans are not the only ones that have that negative attitude towards black people in America.
Right, but we're not saying that. We're talking about specifically the black Korean conflict. So, and doing my research,
they're not the only one. And I'm saying the black.
No, I'm not saying they're the only ones. I'm saying
are
that's
not
what we're talking
the
about
only ones.
Right, they're not the only ones.
How about the black and American conflict?
That's another show, Kenny. I can't cover everything on one show.
But
that's
it's
another
for
show.
How we are perceived. It's how we are perceived.
But this is something we can do.
And sometimes when they have a stereotype, when people have a stereotype, and shit, a lot of us believe in that same stereotype.
Okay, so that's a problem. That's another problem. That's an internal problem.
Yes, and a lot of it, and I'm going to say this, 90% of the problem's on us, really. Because we're spending our money with the Koreans. We're spending our money buying their merchandise.
Right.
Even though they disrespect us, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll be back next week. We'll still go in there. Even though they follow us around the store, we'll still go in there. Even though they say socks, sly, slick stuff to the customers, I'll give you an example. Ooh, this really happened to me. I was living in Brooklyn. And I went to, I got my morning newspaper from this app store every day. Every morning. And one day, and this was during like the crack era. And there was this professionally dressed sister that went in the store. Maybe she came early that day or later, everything. Or maybe it was her first time or she just went to the neighborhood because there was a lot of, people used the word ratchet young ladies. Sisters right. that went in there, flirt with the, what's the name? And they'd be disrespectful. I'm not my business. But this one morning, you know, get my coffee, get my newspaper, about to go get the subway to go to work. And all of a sudden, this cat, this ass behind the counter disrespected the sister because she asked a question about merchandise. Called her a crackhead, whole crackhead. I said, whoa, my man. You don't even know this woman. Because you could tell her that she was no street lady. You know, she was about to go to work. She just asked something. And he just went off. And like, I said, man, don't be. And that was the last day, last morning I went into that store. Because he didn't disrespect me, he disrespected the sister. Well, he disrespected the sister, and that was like disrespecting to me. You know, and we went off. We stood there for 15 minutes. And I didn't go back the next day. But this is how we do. We get disrespected in these people's stores, in these people's salons, and everything, and we go back the next day. Instead of saying, you know what, I gave him a shot, I spent my money with him. Would they know we turned by spending money in the neighborhood, give me the money in the neighborhood. Hell, I ain't going back tomorrow. If I gotta go 10 blocks out the way and find me another hair salon that's owned by a sister, boom, I'm doing it. I heard this sister just recently, like 3 weeks ago. Huh. I'm not going to know because the Koreans do it the best. Go get her nails done. And you know, you say, I'm not going to that because the Koreans do the best nails. That, I wanted to say something, but it was in an inappropriate setting. It wasn't the time and everything. And I wouldn't have made a dent anyway. You know, so again, we have to go to our thinking, and that's what I meant by we are responsible, is us. And you know, you can add media, you can add all the other entities, but again, the finger is pointed at us. We don't have to spend our money with the Koreans. And they're not the only one. Philadelphia is not the only city that's experiencing this problem. New York.
That's all
Chicago,
over.
Chicago, Atlanta, Texas.
California.
You know, so, California, I said L.A.
It's particularly the Korean community, people from the community. Though. That's the thing about it, you know. And as I just spoke about how they systemically cornered the market. They plan to do that and to take the market from the people who originally started this market. You understand what I'm saying? Which were black folks.
And
it
we
was,
have to take
it
the
was,
market
it was
back.
By
again.
For
you
us,
can't blame
for
them.
Us,
you got to blame us for losing the market. I mean,
well, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just stating what happened. I'm stating what happened here.
Yeah.
And I'm not blaming black folks because I don't know exactly what occurred.
Why not?
I don't listen. Because I'm not blaming them. Number one, I'm only stating the facts, and you can make your own decision upon you know what some of the information is saying. So what I'm saying is that we have to be mindful that we have a contingency here, right? That historically sought to oppress us from prospering in a business that we created. You got to understand that.
And these same individuals, I just showed you how they do it.
But I just told you how they did that, though.
Yeah, they calling them off.
Two things happened.
Control of the distribution and everything.
Right.
And
the Korean government, right? And the United States government. That's the two things that happened. Those interventions from those two entities, right, caused disenfranchisement for black beauty products individuals in terms of the hair and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Right.
I know that we used to be in control of that industry. Yes, I know that. But again, we lost control, and we got to look at it. How did we lose the control? How did we lose it? You said it was North Korea, not North Korea, you said it was Korea and United States.
And South Korea.
Okay, fine. You said North Korea?
South Korea, United States, and the Korean... But whoever they are, the Korean entrepreneurs in the business.
Yeah, in America. Okay,
right.
All right. So we allowed that to happen. Yeah, it was a giant, but it's not the first time we fought against giants. We lost power, and we didn't know how to exercise that power. And the Koreans did. We didn't know how to make progress and take what we had and move it to another level.
But, you know,
maybe we didn't have the universal economic system at the time, and they did, and they struck gold.
Hold on, I'm going to say something. Exercising power comes with a responsibility. I want to say that because just because you can get a government to help you take an industry from a people and disenfranchise people, that's not a good business practice as far as I'm concerned. The only problem is that we are, as a people, keep patronizing these people when they continue to disrespect us in our community. You know what I'm saying? But the things that happen to these black entrepreneurs, like they open large stores, like I said to you, next to them, they're going to go out of business. You can't make no money. You can't stay open. They buy out the smaller black stores, right? They use the faces of black celebrities to sell their product, and they hire black employees in their stores to grow their businesses in the black community. You understand? That's a hell of a marketing strategy.
Smart. It's smart.
You know, so with that, you know, it's nothing wrong with putting black people in your store to help yourself out or using black celebrities. I get that, right? But the whole point,
especially when you got black consumers,
But the whole thing in just planning to strategically strangle the black entrepreneurs, that's wrong. That's corrupt, and there lies the problem.
That we participate in that too.
And that is the problem. Right.
We participate in that, you know, and it's not the first time in our history that a culture took something over from us. It happened in hip hop. That was ours. We invented it, you know, and a culture, our one. Name a culture, predominantly just control hip hop now. They don't even look like us. And we're the inventors, like the hair and the hair salon. We are the inventors. And
right, but you know what? You know, but back to the hair salon thing, these guys, you know, who had the hair salon, they straight people. They ain't trying to prohibit the Koreans from getting in the business, but the Koreans tried to prohibit, right, them from prospering. That's a problem there. That's a corrupt mind right there, man. The black entrepreneurs didn't have that attitude, and that's not good business. That's how wars have started, bro. That's how people get hurt. On the street, it's people dying over that same kind of stuff right there, right now. Right now. Somebody made a move, infringing upon somebody else's or ability to make that dollar, right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they somebody right now, there's a lot of people right now that lost the back of their head to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I got another caller. Hold on. Let me call him in. All right, Kenny?
Mm-hmm.
Hello. Welcome to Provocative Thought. Hello? Hello?
It's me.
I know. I just opened some.
Can you hear me? Salaam alaikum.
Oh, wa alaikum assalam.
Hey, Brother Kenny. How's it going?
How you doing? Assalamu alaikum.
Good. Here's my take on this. It's kind of windy, but just knowing business and being around it and watching. The first thing is, I'm going to say, is that one of the problems in the black community as far as business is that most of our businesses are always targeted to other black folks. And you only can go but so far. And the other part to it is that we don't go outside of that. You know, if we went outside and said we have to figure out some type of way what other people needed, we knew, you know, white women get their hair done, their nails done. You know, we go outside and start a business, get those white women. But see, that wasn't going to happen because of the division already. So we were stuck in our communities. What the Koreans was able to do was come in and find a need, a niche. And the niche that they found was laziness. The same things that we know how to do for ourselves, we stop wanting to do it. You see, you know, we had soul food restaurants. They got taken over by Chinese stores selling three chicken wings and french fries.
And all you can eat.
Black folks know how to cook chicken. And all you can eat. We know how to cook, but we stopped cooking. So somebody else said, you know what? I'm going to come in and profit off all the stuff that y'all no longer want to do. It's not that we don't want to do it. They made it convenient. You know, they come in, boom. Not only that, as you said, Carlton, they're working with the government. They get the loans. They get the businesses. They have the trade means, direct trades, without the third party or whatever, which a lot of blacks didn't have that. You know, when they got their stuff, they might even got it from some Korean manufacturers or stores or however they got it at that time. You know, so they were dependent upon that. Here, there, the Koreans could say, okay, well, if this is what they're selling in the United States, we already got this over here. We just go right here and get it. We the source. They come over. So they can beat you out on your price, how much you going to charge. Same thing with the restaurants, the food businesses, and other businesses that blacks had, you know. So the solution to it is exactly what we've been saying. Stop going to them. And now we don't have to go to them because now we have social media and we also have buying online, which you can go direct and buy in bulk and you can get all the same things. You don't even have to interact with these people. You can get it. The saddest part to it is that you still may be giving your money to the same people you interact with.
That's right. That's right.
They still may get it. But on a smaller, on a bigger scale, they don't want to lose that interaction because all of them are not empowered financially. They're making money to support their families back in Korea and other places. So they want to be here. This I know. They want to come here and be here. They're going to make money directly. It's not that easy to make money. Everybody don't go online. Everybody not going to go online and be like, I'm going to get this. You know, black folks were very resourceful. We'll borrow each other's stuff. We'll go back to a time where it's like, all right, well, I need my hair cut. I ain't going to the salon. My cousin, my niece, my uncle, somebody do here. We drop the ball.
Mm-hmm.
We drop the ball. We letting other people do things that we can do. I hear people say it all the time, oh, man, the chicken wings over here at this Chinese store is banging. I'm like, banging? Like, Negro, are you black? Nobody in your family can cook a chicken wing? You know, but
right.
That's part of the other problem. The other problem is addictions. Addictions. A lot of black women are addicted for self-gratification and quick self-gratification. And they want to be adorned. And they don't care at what cost. And they have nasty attitudes. Not all of them, but a lot of them adopted a nasty attitude. These Koreans see the videos, they see the music, they hear the papers, they hear the news. So you figure, oh, well, this is what they're like. This is how they are. Even in the poppy store, you know, they come in. Even if you go to a store and you want food, they already know you want salt, pepper, ketchup, hot sauce. They don't care about your diabetes, your high blood pressure. They think they know you. And the problem in the black community is that we joke with everybody. Oh, mm-hmm. Poppy, this is the poppy store. Oh, mommy, this is this. We go inside there losing our own identity. Play with someone else who don't give a damn about you. Just want your money. But the addictions are great. And it's not just on the women. Because I worked in the delis, the Purple Fox, and the Korean stores. I worked in those spots. And I watched dudes come in and stand outside drinking $2 beers. Now, I don't know why the hell you got to be outside the damn store to drink a beer. As if you have no place else to go, but maybe that's just it. No place else to go, stand right here. We support them because of laziness. We support them because of our sicknesses. And it's not like we can't stop, don't want to stop. We're addicted. And as far as being mistreated, that's nothing compared to how white folks has been treating us. So maybe that's exactly why they go back. Oh, they ain't nothing. They ain't said nothing. They ain't did nothing. They ain't hanging us. I'm going to still go get my weed, my wraps.
It well, it's only 300 enough. Stores. Only 300 stores, you know. So maybe, you know, I try to put as many different reasons down there that I know of that why they may continue to do this. Maybe they can't get to a black store. Maybe they can't afford to go pay steadily those prices. I don't know how that weed stuff costs a lot of money. I think that's a lucrative business. That's not like you go get a weed for $25. I don't think you can get two plats in for $25. I don't know. But you know,
all sisters, mostly all sisters wear the weeds. They find a way to get their weeds.
Right. And that's what they say. That they're very what is that about? That seems to me to be a self esteem issue because they have their own hair. You know what I'm saying? So you are who you are. So why is it so important? That's even another show. Right? Why is it so important for sisters to wear this hair that's basically coming from these Asians? It's not us. What is that all about? Any sisters listening?
Well, you gotta ask sisters that.
Right? Because I can't answer that.
You have women that got positive self-esteem and have beautiful personality and glowing, and they got their weed going. Or they got their hair with their extensions. That's a fashion with them.
I get that part about
you
it being a fashion.
Sisters that. My thing is, my issue is that, you know, is that the weed thing? It's like, who do you go to get that weed thing or get your weed hair and get it braided and get the nails? And you got sisters that do it very well, but we still go to other cultures thinking that, you know, they do it better, which they do. Don't. Like for example, like what the brothers just said, you know, what happened to the... You know, all these little mom and pop, black mom and pop restaurants that I used to know about are owned by now they turn to Chinese restaurants and what have you. You know,
No problem.
Huh?
No problem. You open up a Chinese restaurant in the hood, no problem. Now, what are you doing with that? What are you pushing out of that restaurant? Are Are you doing anything to the black community? Are you doing anything negative to the black community?
No, I say 99.9% of 99.9% of businesses that are other cultures in our neighborhoods do not keep their money in our neighborhoods.
Right.
They take their money out of our neighborhoods. And that is just what they do.
I understand that this
to combat that, how can you take anything out of a neighborhood if you're not giving anything? We have to combat that by opening our own businesses, spending with our own. Even if that merchant strikes, you got to pay a couple dollars more. You know that money's going to be circled.
That's the kill all right, Kenny. You know that. You know that people are going to go where it's cheaper. That's the whole crunch. That's why they overcharge the black merchants. For the same product. You're selling it for 50. I can get it for 40.
They sell it cheap and we keep on going back there. We deserve to get disrespected. Now we're being stupid. Now we got to start thinking more logically. We got to start thinking about ourselves. And we got, like I told you, you know, our money don't stay in our neighborhoods.
And it's not going to stay in our neighborhoods.
Our neighborhoods. Every dollar you spend with that Korean or that
Jew. All right. You know what? Like you said.
Or the Chinese person, or the Arab, or the Indian, Hindu Indian, is legal.
Right. Well, like you said, that's their money. Now, what we need to do is do us. You can't tell them what to do with their money. Get your own money. Make your own way. What's wrong with that? Black people need to make their. We need to step up and start doing us.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But where is us in the community? That's what I want to know, because I don't see us. There was a time when there was a black presence in the community. Like, I remember when all the stores around my neighborhood was black. I remember when it was white. And I don't remember no disrespect coming from them. I'm sure people older than me probably might have experienced some disrespect from white or merchants. But when I grew up, those white merchants didn't disrespect us in the community. You understand what I'm saying? And that's the one point. So another point, everybody when it was all black. They all gone. They all moved out. I remember they was robbing everybody around the way because we had the dope thing. Heroin was big. Crank was big. And it was robbing everything in the neighborhood. So all them stores started, you see them just close down. I remember the store down there on every corner, every block.
The Arabs, the Indians, and the Chinese.
Well,
some stores never open up again. Right. Some stores never open up again. And like you said, like right now, it's a lot of poppy stores around there. And who owns Family Dollar and Dollar General?
I think Indians do. I think Family Dollar is an Indian-owned company. I'm not too sure now. I'm just... Right.
Whatever it is, it's not us.
I know Family Dollar is not American industry like Walmart is.
Right.
I could be wrong.
That's not us.
I could be wrong. I don't know, but I'm assuming though.
Right. Okay.
Hello.
So you know. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you know.
Hello.
You know. Go ahead. I'm gonna say this is that
people know what's going on. Some people do. The problem is a lot of these women and a lot of people don't care. But I think they should care if they absolutely looked at that. If you went to India and you black, nobody's going to patronize your business. If you go to China, you can't even own any business in China and you're black or African. But they can own businesses in Africa. And Africans are complaining about going in their restaurants and everything. So here we have Africans who have Chinese people. They're telling them that you can't come into our restaurant after a certain hour. We don't allow blacks in there. And they bellyaching. I wouldn't even worry about trying to get in a restaurant. Don't
hey,
go
you know
there.
What I say? You know what I say to that? Kenny, what's your theme song? Shut them
down.
Shut
them
well,
down.
Is what,
all that.
And this is
all
exactly what I'm saying.
And you know how you shut them down? It's easy. You don't have to be violent about it. Like I said, I started off with the conversation. We had to take on our responsibility. And what our responsibility is not to patronize it. And they, either one or two things is going to happen. Either they're going to change their attitude towards us or they're going to be shut down. Especially,
you know what?
especially if most of the consumer are black.
Right.
If most of the consumers are black and blacks stop patronizing, I've seen it done. Once or twice, I've seen it done. It can happen. But again,
right. You know,
it got to be our responsibility.
Right. You're right, Kenny. You know what? The Selma bus boycott is a prime example of that.
But see, let me tell you something. When I look at the Montgomery boycott, right? Montgomery bus boycott.
Right.
We missed the opportunity. We missed the opportunity. You want to know what that opportunity was? We had an opportunity to start our own bus company. That's
well, I believe that that had happened in Selma as well. They did have those things, but in doing that, if you're outnumbered and you have people who can attack you, you know, using violence and police and, you know, armies or government, I don't think, you know, the idea at that particular time of starting our own buses, because then, you know, you're gonna have a loss of buses. If they're willing to kill people, they're sure enough going to destroy your buses. Then you got to get those same buses from – they're not coming from black folks because we didn't have, you know, just like we don't have guns. We talk about guns, hey, we ain't making guns. If we made guns and bullets, I say, hey, we can get in this battle, but we don't, you know. But going back to this hair thing and thinking about the women – you know, it takes me back to think that this is the same thing that happened to the men that were entertainers and they had to straighten their hair, you know, and probably did all it.
Yeah.
Right. At that particular time. So now moving fast forward, you know, I'm also looking at the sisters and I'm giving them, you know, I'm looking at this from another angle. Not only are they oppressed by white men and white women in comparison, but they also been oppressed by black men who have settled for white women, Asian women, Hispanic women, everybody without their texture here that the black woman has. Then she's pasted and shown that her beauty is not in comparison unless she has a certain type of hair. And then they take other women, light-skinned women, put wigs on them and make them to be adorned. So psychologically, I know our women are going through some hell. I know they went through something and still going through something. But that same thing that they're going through has become addictive nature, low self-esteem, and all those things just added up to someone else coming in and saying, oh, you know what, I can help you out. I'll sell you this fake stuff and make you feel good. Until we, the men, start making our queens feel good and they start feeling good about themselves, going natural, then we can start making some movements. But as long as people got an addiction, is going to stay there. Now, I'm saying this because at one time it was this Korean dude who slapped this black woman, and it was on the news, and some brothers went there to go shut it down, which they did. But there was these sisters, when they opened back up, that was fighting with the brothers. I don't give a damn about that other girl and her getting slapped. I'm getting my hair. They're addicted.
That's the problem
they don't
right care. There. That's the cause.
They don't care.
That's what I've been trying to say this whole conversation. That's
so
the
sisters,
problem
they can't
there.
Stop. They can't stop taking the bus.
Yeah, the woman was slapped. Instead of boycotting that store, first of all, You got that social media now. Instead of putting on the social media, they put on, so that's how I learned about it. They put on social media. They were educated. They also woke. They saw how this system was abused. Okay? They saw how this system was abused. And then what happened the next day? They went back instead of stopping, going, and giving their hard-earned money to them. Now, what type of message that's sending to other store owners in that neighborhood that don't look like us?
Who disrespect us. They saying, hey, we got a contingency around here that these people are not, number one, together, united, right? They can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, or not on this occasion. They were unable to do it. And so we don't have to respect them, because all we got to do is lay low for a minute, then we can come back up and keep making that money. So I don't know what the brothers do to the people. What did they do to them?
What did the brothers do to the sister?
Yeah, what did they do? You said the brothers went to the store because the guy slapped the sister, right? He slapped the sister in the face. What did the brothers do to the man that slapped the sister in the face?
Well, they went to go hem him up, but they didn't. They didn't physically touch him, but they gave him stern warnings, and then they came and they stayed there outside that store, boycotting the store. But the sisters told them, well, I don't give a damn. I'm going inside there. And the merchant said, I'm going to give
problem.
A sale.
Okay.
I'm going to have
I
a sale on certain things.
I got you. So, Kenny, I know
and,
you said no violence.
The sister went after the dude.
Right.
The sister
Kenny,
went after the dude.
I know you said no violence, but in that situation right there, that guy should have got smashed.
He should have got. And
yeah,
was
I can't agree. But see, if that guy would have got smashed, what's the next scene? Here come 5-0. What happened after that? Brothers get jailed or shot, and nothing's gone.
Oh,
and
I didn't say he had the killing. I didn't say he had the killing.
And that career is going to be protected in our community.
All right, did she press charges against the guy?
Protected in our community.
No.
Did she press charges?
No.
No, come on now. That's no consequence.
And she had a child in her hand.
I slapped
she
you
had
in the
a
face
child
too.
In her hand.
What?
I didn't know that. And
no consequences.
Charges?
No consequences, man. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man. Look, man. Go in the hood right now and slap one of these girls in the face. See how long you last.
We're going to jail or we're going to get shot.
Yeah, you're going to
get beat up by our brothers.
Right. You're going to get about 8 slugs. I'm going to tell you right now. You might get the whole clip. So that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. How is this guy, how is he not afraid to slap a sister in the face in the black community? But it was my sister. I'm telling you, I'm going to jail behind that. It was my sister. I'm getting locked up, Kenny. I'm telling you.
But listen to what the brother said, though. Listen to what the brother said. When the brothers went to protect her and confront him and stare him down and boycott the store or make sure the sister go get her rat, sisters start attacking the brothers verbally.
Okay, and that don't stop you from giving out a beat down on somebody. You slap my sister. I'm gonna beat you down. You're gonna get more than slap. You don't know.
Well,
the men
wasn't related to the girl. They heard the incident and they went there like, listen, you're not gonna do this in our community. You're not gonna be putting your hands on our women. You're not gonna be disrespecting us. And this has happened quite a few times. This was just one incident out of many.
Well,
but the thing about it is that the women go right back to it.
No beat down. That's why he's doing it over and over again. It had nothing to do with women coming back to the store. It has everything to do with the consequences were not there.
I'm not going to do certain things I'm not going to do because I know it's a death sentence. You know it. Y'all, both of y'all know it. Y'all know certain things you do, it's a death sentence. So if you do do it, better be prepared to die, right? Or go directly to jail.
Well,
I'm just trying to
keep
it real.
Then you got this idea that these people are also watching the news and they're watching black men and black women being shot and killed by police. And, you know, the only thing that happens is, you know, they go riot or protest. But ain't nobody, you know, killing police and fighting them back. Well, I ain't going to say that now because it has happened. But as far as for these stores, they see the culture like, oh, they're just emotional, irrational people. They're going to holler and bicker, and they're going to come right back. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to unite because if they was, I'm nobody. But they would do it against their real enemies, and they haven't done it to this day. So, I, you know.
Okay. Do it to the enemy that's right next door to you. All right? Do it to the one that's right next that you see every day. If he's offensive to your community, shut him down.
I agree.
That's what I
think. I agree.
Shut him
down.
They
can be shut down. They can be shut down.
Don't buy nothing from there. Don't buy matches. Don't buy cigarettes. Don't buy a sandwich, a bag of chips. Don't buy nothing from there. If he put his hands on somebody from the community, whip that ASS.
I agree, but, you know, like I said, they are.
We got to take all these. Ain't gonna know so called.
Even if I put his hands on my people, I'm telling you now. I'm gonna hurt him. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm sorry. I'm going to jail. The police
gonna
shoot me down.
How long are we going to boycott? Hey, we might do it for 3 days. We might do it for 7 days. Hell, we might do it for 2 weeks. Are we in it for the long haul? Are we gonna take this experience and move it on to another experience?
Shut them down mean? What does shut them down mean?
Shut them down.
I mean, that don't exist.
Get them out.
And that's the problem.
Get them
out.
Man, shut them
See,
down.
That's the problem.
They done. They done.
But that's the problem. Because the fear is, I want them to close. I want my hair. Look, with COVID going on, did you know Atlanta? It was one store in Atlanta, I think. What did they say? They made $75,000 in a day or more?
Yeah.
Or it might have been like $100,000 in a day. Soon as they said it's okay. And COVID was at its height. And it was black folks at the hair store.
Wow.
So they're risking their lives. You're going to risk your life to go get hair, nails, whatever products. They risk their lives. So, yeah, I get where these Koreans are coming from. He's like, you know what? I'm gonna get this guap. I don't care about these people. I'm gonna get this guap. They don't care.
And the hell with them.
And the hell with them.
Okay, I you know, like I'm saying, I don't have a problem with Korean opening up a store in the community, or Chinese, or Latino. What I have a problem with is these people disrespecting the people in the community. I got a problem with that. And if you're putting your hands on us, like I'm saying, self-defense. You have a right to defend yourself and defend your family.
Well, and on the other thing, too, I'm going to say this, too. I worked in some of those stores, and I've watched black folks come in very disrespectful, and these people are not initially coming disrespectful. I think they get conditioned, and they get pissed off like, I'm tired of this. I'm sick of the way they talking to us and, you know, stealing and acting. And that could be it, too. But I do know this much. These women are nasty, nasty attitudes. They go in there very disrespectful, talking real loud, cursing, hollering, highly emotional, you know. And that's a problem. And that's something that has become a culture within our communities that used to didn't be there. I don't know. I got an idea where it started, but right now it's overboard. We have this hyper masculine thing going on with the women. So,
okay.
You know, I don't know how many days this man may have to take that.
And it's escalating.
I got that. All right. Okay. We got that going on. We got a lot of problems. We got a lot of issues we need to work on ourselves. But this thing about Korean shop owners not being polite, right? Mm-hmm. That is a problem. And they talk about sometimes they overcharge customers and often make fail to make a change properly. Come on now, you were talking about that the other day, me and you. So cause I'm like, listen, this is something that's going on. This is something that's being repeated. This ain't something just happened. Like you said, Kenny, this ain't just a Philadelphia thing. This ain't a New York thing. This thing is being repeated all over the country.
Yeah.
And so why do they feel so comfortable?
I got a newsflash. The Koreans are not the only culture that disrespect black consumers. A lot of cultures
we acknowledge that, Kenny.
Our neighborhoods. You know, and just not the Koreans, man. You know,
we acknowledge that, Kenny. We acknowledge that the Koreans aren't the only people. And as far as that goes for anybody in the black community. If you're going to be disrespectful to our people in the community, shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
That's anybody, black, white, Latino, African, Mexican. Who else? Any more cans? Anybody else?
Pakistani,
Indian. Shut them down. Do not patronize people who will not respect you. Respect costs nothing. It's not a cultural thing. That's a human quality. They know what respect is. They come from a people that want to be respected. They know what respect is. Especially these Asian cultures. Are you kidding? All cultures have know what respect is. That's a human quality. That costs nothing. It's not going to hurt their business. It's going to help their business, as a matter of fact.
So why they don't respect us?
You just said, y'all just gave some good reasons. I wouldn't respect you either. You don't do nothing. I smacked one of your community members in the face. You don't like yourself because you keep needing all these things for you to make you look different because you don't like the way you really look. So maybe they don't respect that. I don't know what it is. You know, because
we don't have any perceived power. We have no perceived power. Even if they call the cops, the incident comes down and the cops is taking the side of the merchant. You know, the black person, you don't have a say-so. You being arrested and this person attacked you, but because they have a business, you know, because they have other groups of people who have money, it's the same thing with voting. If we have money, we'd be a power. They look at us totally different. We could add to it. But since
Claude
we don't
Anderson.
Add to anything, huh?
Claude Anderson said that. We can't come to the table because we don't have any money. No bread. You don't have no bread, you can't break bread
how about
at the table.
And also, Dr. Anderson said that we do have the resources, but we don't use it in the right way. Yeah, remember, we spend $1.3 trillion a year. You can't tell by looking at our neighborhoods. Look, how can we allow? I know it might be getting off the subject a little bit. How can we allow? We spend $1.3 trillion. None of us stay 1%. Half a percent stay in our neighborhoods. We don't have anything to show for $1.3 trillion. We don't own our schools. We can't. That's how come. Local, state, and government officials do not listen to any of our representatives when it comes to trying to do something for our neighborhood because, what y'all been saying, you know, behavior, attitude, not having our own businesses, not having any economic control.
Power or anything.
You're a foreigner. You know, you don't understand the 450 years that we've been through and what have you. You say, wow, you be over here. That's all you got to show for. And what you say when you first came on, you know, they think we're lazy. We have been perceived as being lazy people. All we want to do is have babies, wear our pants around our knees,
and go to jail and not take care of our children. That is the international, that is the global perception of the black man in America. I'm not really saying I agree with that, but that is the global perception of the black man in America.
Well, the sad part is that we're trying to live up to that image instead of fighting.
Yeah, trying to believe in those stereotypes. Right. Yeah.
They living up to it, you know. But the thing about the businesses is that that was their way of making sure that we don't come to the table with anything. So they allow other groups of people to come in. Hey, you can go in this community and you can sell your product. You ain't going to see that in every white community. And when you do see a Chinese store, believe me, it ain't in one of those corner joints. It's going to be something you're going to sit down. The whole family going to come in, sit down, had dinner,
right,
go out.
This is nice. This is nice. That's what you're going to say.
Okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? Hey, look, it's going to look like one of
like
those movies.
To back up what you just said, like I told Carl earlier in the show, that I lived in both environments. The Chinese restaurant in the black neighborhood is different from the Chinese restaurant in the white neighborhood. The food tastes different and everything.
And it's not five of them per six blocks.
Right. Right.
So okay, it only makes sense that that would happen, though, because if we had the businesses, if we sustain businesses in the black community, then that means we start to acquire wealth, and that means we have money to bring to the table. We have something
to work with. But it's only one thing.
But you can't.
One thing.
You can't empower your money. We're the money. So if we start to be empowered, where are they going to get their money from?
But we ain't worried about their money. That's the whole thing. We should be worried about us.
And we shouldn't be. And that's what
we should
be worried
about.
Their
money.
Apparently,
they ain't helping us out. We're not worried about them. Black people need to feed themselves, right? Don't depend on Koreans or anybody else to commit to you. If they were committed to you, we wouldn't be holding this conversation. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We need to invest and become vested in ourselves, foster and strengthen the relationship with your own people. Stop robbing each other, knocking each other in the head.
That's step number one. When we open up these businesses, we got to patronize them.
Yeah. Hey, we got another call, y'all. Hold up.
Hey,
hello. Carl. Welcome to Provocative Thought. How you doing? This is Ty.
Yeah, this is Tyrone.
How you doing, Ty?
You know, all right. How's everybody out there? Listen, I was listening to y'all talking about the 1% of wealth that black people are supposed to have in the whole country. And, this is a rapper who were bringing it to my attention. I didn't know how much wealth that black people was handling in the community. And they were really talking about celebrities and everything else, you know. But then y'all also talk about us supporting each other, you know. And I came to the conclusion that if we would try to create a community again of black people with stores and everything, something like the Black Wall Street community, We can't wait and ask people. We got to create it.
That's right.
We got to make a community that's unified. And then blacks have to make a decision whether they want to be a part of that. But in the process of creating it, we got to protect it too.
That's right.
Because that's what these people do. They create their community, and they're ready to stand up and fight for it and die for it.
Right.
You know? So I don't see us going out there doing a whole lot of talking to the ones that wear their pants down and all this stuff. We got to get together. Whoever want to make it, whoever want this black unified community, have to help create it and protect it. That's my view.
Hey, I like that.
Question. I like that too. But can I ask a question? What is a community now? Because when I was growing up, I understood what a community was. Is you have people that basically from a radius of a couple blocks may even know each other, self-sufficient within it. But the way gentrification and everything else is going on now, we barely even have neighborhoods, especially North Philadelphia. You know, there's places in North we can say, hey, that's a whole community, but it's not any longer. It's fragments of people everywhere, you know, and they don't have anything. Much of
cannot allow that to stop us. I still can't stop us. That ain't going to stop us.
This is our opportunity now to create a new unified community.
Right. You gotta. We gotta work with where we are. From where we are,
that's
grow.
Right.
That's the way it goes. So
I'm talking about the hopeless part. I don't like to hear people talk about, you know, they don't have no hope. They be talking about what the white man done and what this man done. What are you gonna do? Why don't we come together and talk about what we can do, what we know we can do? You know, and the only way you're going to get something done is you got to unify and come together and create it. Start somewhere. Start right, like Carlton, you said. You got to start from right now.
Right. Wherever you are, that's where you got to start, man.
My son, I just started, a communication with him, communication line open with him. And that's what's going on with me and him. We starting from right now. And I hadn't spoke to my son in maybe 10 to 15 years, you know. And when my mom passed, he called me and he thought about how his family members were dying. And he said, Dad, I need to really get to know you, because anything could happen. One of us could pass, and we were living and didn't take the opportunity to get to know each other.
Right.
And he said, well, we're going to start from here.
That's right.
And that's where you start from. You start right from where, because we can talk about this all we want, but the ones that really want to make a difference have to start somewhere.
Right. Now. You want to start from now. This is the only time you have. Today.
Right now. Right?
That's right.
That's right, brother.
That's it. And, you know, we run out of time, y'all. So anybody want to have any closing statements? Right. Take like 15 seconds. Just want to say something? Anybody?
Start from now.
Start from now. Yeah, that's right, man.
All I want
to say, do not sell your integrity for some hair, alcohol, beauty products, or food.
And do for
Raise
self.
The moral
and do for food. Self.
Right, that's right. Raise the moral, ethical bar in the community. Demand respect. All
right?
Don't
that's
ask
right.
for it. Demand it.
All right.
Demand it. That's right. Start something good and protect it. Demand
right.
it. Protect it.
That's right. It don't matter what misinformation or lies other people might have been fed about us entering the United States or not. Respect is due to a dog. Respect is not a cultural thing. That is a human thing. Try disrespecting them in their community and see what happens. Right?
And stop talking. That's right. Stop talking about black people ain't going to do it because they don't stick together. Stop bringing useless words to conversation.
Right. Let's
Tell
do
people
it.
People that you can do it. You can do
Shut
it.
Shut them down. Right?
Right.
Shut them down. They disrespect you. Kenny, your theme song should have been my theme song for the night. Shut them down.
Yeah.
I should have played that. Shut them down. All right,
Shut
y'all. We're
done
for the night.
Shut
I'm going to thank
right
everybody
down.
For calling in. That's right. All you listeners for listening in today. And everybody, think about it. Do something. That's I'm going to leave you with that. Think about it. Do it. All right? Peace, y'all. All
right. God bless. Peace. I'm going to call you.
All right.
All right, brother.
Come here.
Thanks for calling in, you guys. I want to thank Recon Productions for allowing me to host this show. Blog Talk Radio, Mr. Kenneth Jones, Paris.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
And all you listeners for listening in and downloading the show.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.